Graham Keir lived and breathed jazz. While other teenagers crammed for SATs, he was catching sets at Philadelphia clubs, guitar in hand. By college, Downbeat magazine had crowned him best soloist. His future seemed carved in stone, until he started playing concerts at a pediatric cancer center. Watching those kids fight for their lives, something shifted. The applause that once electrified him began to feel hollow. What if he could do more than perform? What if he could actually save lives? There was just one problem. Graham was spectacularly bad at science. He'd celebrated passing high school chemistry by literally burning his coursework. Math made him want to flee the room. The idea of becoming a doctor seemed absurd, like a fish deciding to climb a tree. Yet that pull wouldn't let go, so he did something terrifying. He signed up for calculus, the very subject he'd spent years avoiding. Months before class started, he began studying a pre-calculus ebook during his commute, relearning concepts he'd forgotten or never truly understood. When the semester began, he competed against Columbia pre-meds who'd been groomed for medicine since birth. He earned an A-. That single grade didn't just boost his transcript, it rewired his understanding of what his brain could do. At 13, Adam Koo was failing everything. Expelled at 9 for fighting, unable to focus, consistently at the bottom of his class, he'd internalized the labels, lazy and stupid. His mother, trying to be understanding, suggested he'd inherited her poor math genes. That explanation felt like permission to give up. Then he attended Super Teen Camp and learned memory techniques, mind mapping, and goal setting. He began visualizing success, plastering his room with affirmations, "Junior college, here I come." Despite being a slow learner, he developed rigorous habits, pre-reading materials, creating visual mind maps with cartoons, practicing problems until they became subconscious. He maximized every spare minute, studying during bus rides and between classes. Adam openly shares his challenges. He describes himself as not very smart, which forces him to simplify concepts in ways that resonate with others. His self-described flaws, stubbornness, naivety, obsessive worrying, became strengths. His obsessive nature drives thorough preparation. His creative thinking balances his business partner's detail-oriented approach. Paradoxically, his limited working memory forced him to simplify complex topics, leading to conceptual breakthroughs that smarter people with larger working memories often miss. What looked like limitations became his greatest assets, proving that how you think matters more than how fast you think. Your abilities aren't fixed. They're waiting to be discovered through deliberate effort and a willingness to feel uncomfortable. Claudia drove Seattle buses for years while battling lifelong depression, a genetic inheritance she'd accepted as permanent. After crashing while avoiding a pedestrian, she quit, knowing the darkness would return without work to distract her. Desperate, she tried jazzercise. Despite feeling awkward, something unexpected happened. She started enjoying it. What Claudia stumbled upon was one of neuroscience's most powerful discoveries. Exercise floods your brain with BDNF, a protein that acts like fertilizer for neurons, nurturing existing brain cells while helping new ones grow. It improves blood flow, boosts neurotransmitters, and can even reverse age-related cognitive decline. Exercise isn't magic. Olympic athletes aren't all geniuses, and people with physical limitations learn brilliantly. But for Claudia, movement became transformative. 3 years later, she reports no serious depressive episodes. Physical movement literally reshapes your brain's architecture, creating new pathways and possibilities you never imagined existed. Ali Naqvi failed at math repeatedly. Despite tutors and desperate effort in Pakistan, numbers remained incomprehensible. He embraced the creative type label, barely scraping through graduation with media studies in Australia. Then life intervened. His dream job managing web content for a golf academy led him to a UK startup as SEO executive. The role demanded what terrified him: servers, databases, analytics, algorithms, math and science disguised as marketing. Financial necessity forced confrontation with demons he'd avoided for years. 5 years in, wanting deeper understanding, he tackled programming and initially crashed hard. Then something clicked. He discovered transformative techniques, 25-minute focus sessions with breaks, chunking concepts into memorable pieces, metaphors and visual imagery, teaching concepts aloud. Most powerfully, he applied his golf coach's wisdom. The past is the past. What you can control is your attitude on the next shot. His wasted years pursuing golf had taught him emotional control and persistence that made technical transformation possible. 5 years in, wanting deeper understanding, he tackled programming and initially crashed hard. Then something clicked. He discovered transformative techniques, 25-minute focus sessions with breaks, chunking concepts into memorable pieces, metaphors and visual imagery, teaching concepts aloud. Most powerfully, he applied his golf coach's wisdom. The past is the past. What you can control is your attitude on the next shot. His wasted years pursuing golf had taught him emotional control and persistence that made technical transformation possible. Tanya DeBee spent evenings in online role-playing games, managing forums, crafting HTML, navigating digital legal systems, and dealing with trolls, deliberate disruptions from chaos seekers. While her Leiden University day job involved basic administrative tasks, her nights mastered online community psychology. When Leiden planned a terrorism MOOC expecting thousands discussing inflammatory topics, someone asked about handling trolls. The professor's response? What's a troll? Suddenly, Tanya's useless gaming experience became invaluable expertise. She understood what academics couldn't. Anonymous forums attract disruptive personalities who derail communities. Leiden made her their MOOC community manager. She trained volunteer mentors, advised professors, don't feed the trolls, and ensured quality experiences for thousands. While other European institutions saw declining MOOC enrollment, Leiden thrived. She now travels globally as a respected expert, getting paid for what she once did for fun. Your seemingly frivolous interests aren't distractions. They might be preparing you for careers that don't exist yet. Zach Caceres dropped out of ninth grade and started cleaning toilets at 14. Today, he directs a college in Guatemala City. His path reveals something crucial. The institution matters far less than your initiative. After leaving school, Zach cold called a jazz professor repeatedly until he secured a meeting, offering menial labor in exchange for music education. Jazz taught him procedural fluency and deliberate practice, the woodshed mentality of repeatedly tackling difficult aspects until they become second nature. At 16, he enrolled in community college, later transferring to NYU, where he graduated summa cum laude with a 3.98 GPA while working full-time and commuting 2 hours daily. His self-designed education led him to create an experimental liberal arts program where students design their own degrees. Zach credits his success to organic mentorships that emerged from real-world value exchange, not institutional programs. Sociologist Joan McCord found that formal mentorship programs often harm participants by creating unhealthy dependency. Zach's mentorships worked because they were purpose-driven apprenticeships focused on specific skills. They succeeded precisely because they weren't formalized programs, but emerged from his initiative and willingness to contribute. Singapore transformed from struggling island with double-digit unemployment in 1965 to global powerhouse with 2% unemployment today. Their secret? Treating learning as national infrastructure. Every Singaporean over 25 receives $500 for training in anything they want, not just employer-mandated courses. This isn't charity, it's strategic investment in adaptability. Patrick Tay, a lawyer and parliament member, champions the T-shaped approach, developing two deep skill areas instead of one, creating resilience when industries shift. Dr. Soon Jo Gog notes that change is the only constant, while recognizing that careers define our identity in life. Critics cite test-intensive education stifling creativity, though Singapore actively addresses these concerns. Their high PISA scores reflect deep thinking and problem-solving taught at every level. Singapore isn't just educating individuals, it's engineering a learning culture that treats continuous development as essential as infrastructure. When society values growth and provides resources to support it, transformation becomes expected, a cultural norm rather than individual struggle. For 50,000 years, humans saw horses as food until someone asked, "What if we could ride them?" That shift changed civilization. We do the same to ourselves, viewing our past as dead ends when we should see untapped potential. Terence Cichnowsky, now a legendary neuroscientist in all three top U.S. scientific academies, started in physics at Princeton. After a decade, he realized meaningful physics advances required prohibitively expensive equipment and pivoted completely to neuroscience. His physics background gave him unique modeling tools his peers lacked. Online learning has democratized such transformations. Arnim Rodek completed over 40 MOOCs and became a self-employed woodworker. David Venturi abandoned his University of Toronto computer science degree after realizing MOOCs offered superior learning, creating his own data science master's for $1,000 Canadian versus $30,000 plus traditionally. Pat Bowden completed 71 MOOCs and found a second career as a writer. Quadriplegic Hans Lefebvre has taken over 50 computer science MOOCs, typing with a mouth stick, excelling as a top student. Paul Hundle, a 59-year-old Vancouver lawyer, completed his 100th MOOC, using diverse knowledge to become a better lawyer and environmentalist. These aren't stories of people who had it easy. They're stories of people who refused to let their starting point determine their destination. Louise, a 62-year-old with limited horse experience, struggled with Specs, a dangerous, improperly trained horse. The breakthrough came through bridge and target training, teaching Specs to move toward a plastic disc using clucking sounds and blueberry rewards. This gave Specs agency in his learning. Louise learned to read his body language, recognizing that completing tasks with angry ears and tensed body wasn't true success. She discovered that attitude trumps everything. Graham transformed from jazz musician to doctor. Claudia went from depressed bus driver to the most positive person her friends know. Allie conquered math that once defeated him. Zach built a college after dropping out of ninth grade. Each story reveals the same truth. Your brain is more malleable than you think, your past more valuable than it appears, and your future more open than you dare imagine. The neuroscience confirms this. Your brain constantly rewires itself based on what you practice. BDNF from exercise grows new neurons. Deliberate practice creates automatic neural pathways. Even perceived weaknesses, limited working memory, slower processing speed, unconventional backgrounds, can become advantages when you work with them rather than against them. The question isn't whether you can change. Neuroscience confirms you can. The question is, will you? Your past isn't a prison, it's a launchpad.